agree with that myself. I'm local Marion. We can move to public order. No one did motion.
Oh, no motion?
It doesn't seem on paper that it really belongs to that, and that's why I have to make the motion.
It's kind of.
That was kind of.
Yeah, I don't.
I do remember feeling quite strongly about the unlawful exploitation of water. I think that does belong to the tax exempt.
Okay, let's hold on that. Okay, well, maybe we'll do that again when we get that section. Okay, moving on. I think it's important for the record to know the way kidnapping is defined, it's defined essentially as an abduction, and that is defined on page 51. Abduction in turn is defined as restraint. Now, the way we define kidnapping is there's no requirement of a movement. You could do a kidnapping by simply confining someone at that specific area. And you look on page 51, line 22, you'll find that restrain means to restrict a person's movements unlawfully so as to interfere substantially with his liberty. My reading of that, and I think it's important to just get this on the record, is that we're not talking here about de minimis restraints. For example, every robbery is going to involve some restraint, simply because you say, don't move, I'll blow your head off. And it's not the intent of this to change every robbery, to make every robbery also involve kidnapping.
But the law does, though. I mean, every robbery could, right now, under this code, the principal charge of kidnapping
This came up, based on our discussion. I think the way it's written on line 22 is, so as to interfere substantially with your liberty, I think the intent there is to require more than just that temporary restraint. We could, if we wanted, if you thought it was more necessary to emphasize that we're talking about more than very small restraints, on line 24, we could say, or by defining him either in the place where the restriction commences for a substantial period, and get the substantial in again. I don't think it's necessary myself. Arkansas has the same statute, and they have pretty strong commentary to the point that I'm making. And I would just like my feeling.
It has to be
more than just, pointing a gun at someone saying, don't move, and, you hold them up, or, every sexual assault is arguably a kidnapping, even though obviously you're going to be restraining the person, and I don't think that's the intent. And I don't think it's necessary, Doug, to make a specific reference in the statute, but I wanted to bring that up.
Well, I mean, you could even go further, Barry, and say, if you restrain someone with the intent to put them in fear of their life, then that's kidnapping.
I agree. And again, is that I think that in line 22 on page 51, so as to interfere substantially with your liberty, we're talking more than. I think we're talking about more than that kind of restraint.
The thing is, you're saying, Barry, you could add a time factor.
I wouldn't want to add a time factor. You could, again, on line 24, you could say where the restriction commences for a substantial period of time. But again, I think the substantial is already in there on line 22. I didn't shepherd this through the committee, so I don't recall their.
How about an adjective for confinement, so that it makes it clear that it's more than just a, hold.
Well, like what?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. I did some checking. The best I could come up with was that substantial suggestion after it commences.
Well, it seems like the real controlling phrase here is interfere substantially with his liberty. Then the rest modifies that. So the key phrase there is interfere substantially with his liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's whatever that means. And,
doesn't it by legislative fiat define what interfere substantially with his liberty means?
As what?
By confining him.
Now, the ordinance is
identical.
He'll be glad to hear that.
No, what is it, but it is kind of could be too bad.
Well, Karen brought it up, and it's a facility that they're gonna make this move. It's too broad. We just get a standard with the ones that are. But I don't see a problem.
Well, I think that's more theoretical.
Well, I don't know, you know, it's only good as a prosecutor, and they charge, prosecutor could charge kidnapping under that tax situation.
Well, if we say one, by moving him.
Or by confining him. See, I also think the word confining is more than simply the robbery, you know? Yeah.
It's a little bit broader than confining him either, so you can confine him in the place where the restriction commences.
Right.
Whereas you can confine him at the place that you quote.
Don't move.
Yeah, don't move.
Don't move or blow your head off. And if you're threatening deadly physical force, and that's a requirement for kidnapping under the definition of abduction, which is required for.
There's no definition of confining in the definition of abduction.
No, there is no.
If it is a problem, the way to get to it is by putting a time limit. Or putting for more than 5 minutes or more than half an hour or something like that.
I think it's probably, I don't know.
Is this the existing Oregon law though?
No, this is not existing Oregon law. I believe it's existing in New York law.
The New York law's been there since 1967, what's the last one?
Well, the Oregon law has the same phrase, interferes substantially with the liberty, which. Yeah, but it does, the difference is though, is it requires that you confine yourself creatively, you know. That you, it is a confinement that you want, you know, when there's other people around, or. Right, they. Right, New York is our language, we got our language in New York.
And how old is that?
That's 1967.
I was in New York when I was kind of trying to take criminal law, as a matter of fact, in her lecture, yeah, to testify to New York Assembly and putting on.
You and Mike Coon.
Yeah.
Where was that guy from Texas?
Actually, I wasn't aware of this until someone pointed it out, and consequently, it's not reflected in the commentary.
Can we just ask you to go and check the annotations if they've got the same?
Yeah.
They may have had a court case that defines confinement.
Okay. I'll see what I can
do. Of course, under City of Fairbanks versus Scheibel and everything in the world, we take it with whatever the instruction is placed on it by the original state. So by God, and check to see if there's a New York case on.
We're going to add commentary at least.
Yeah, that's what I wanted.
In any case, we're adding commentary. If you think it's a problem after checking the New York case, we can add
that. Okay. Terry, I think, consistent with your amendment this afternoon, on page 49, lines 8 through 10, you probably want to go read it.
That with that language, just the same amendment we had earlier.
Read through that or what?
Nothing in, it's, the section says nothing in this subsection includes a prosecution.
It's page 49 on 8 through 10.
It appears incidentally in some places in the code, right? I'm not sure what.
It is going to appear in the commentary that by debating this, we are not.
Yeah.
My intention is wherever.
It's in the general section at the beginning of the code somewhere.
How do we handle this one?
Well, we don't. Leave it up. I mean, if you got a defense to one crime, it's a defense to that crime, it's not a defense to any other. So I just think that your point is that we don't do that all the time, and we just shouldn't be selective.
I have no objection to putting the general section, though, to say, whenever in this title, defense is provided to one crime, it does not constitute defense to any other.
Sure.
That's not very enlightening.
I agree.
It's not particularly enlightening. That's like profoundly saying the trees are not coal miners or something like that.
Okay.
I think the body of the subcommittee. So I'd rather say it once than over and over.
Right. I think we need it. We can state it generally.
Well, are you moving to
delete
that
language?
To delete even line 8 and 10.
Is there any objection to the amendment? There's no objection to the amendment.
Okay. Next thing is on page, well, actually, on page 49, this is kind of a technical change. Line 27, I'd like to knock out the language causes a person, but knock out the language person from person to line 28 to custodian. So it should be according to the victim to be removed from the stage.
You're inserting the word victim.
Yes, and removing the other language. And then on page 49.
Oh, I see, because it's all just a surplusage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nicely kept from. It could be part of causing the victim to be removed.
Mm-hmm.
I would so move.
And also, just
slow down.
What's your name?
I would say, causes the victim to be removed from the state for is how subsection 1 would now read.
Causes the what?
Victim to be removed from the state for. Okay. And I would so move.
Hearing no objection.
Somebody did something.
Hearing no objection, then it's done.
Mr. Chairman, Fort Brown thinks it's doing a job on it so far.
But where'd you hear that from? Are you reading the newspapers?
No. He just called Jimmy the Greek at ringside.
Okay. On line 29, same page, person should change to victim.
So moved.
Any objection to the amendment? Line 29, 249. Any objection to the amendment?
Okay, next page. When we were back in Anchorage, I had occasion to talk to the public defender, Brian Shortell. He made the point that in the creation of the crime, unlawful imprisonment, which is on page 50, lines 11 through the end of that page, which you divide into 2 degrees, we're expanding existing law. Because there is no crime of unlawful imprisonment under existing law. It's simply kidnapping or nothing else. And that we shouldn't, unlawful imprisonment, which would be slamming the door on someone and not letting them out, should be dealt with civilly. I would recommend that you delete the second degree provision, but keep the first. In other words, just have 1 degree of unlawful imprisonment, and that would be the first degree provision. And that would be restraining a person under circumstances which expose him to a risk of serious physical injury. Now, you may even take issue with that. In other words, we have a crime of reckless endangerment in the assault provisions, which say that if you recklessly engage in conduct and you expose a person to a substantial risk of serious physical injury, that's an A misdemeanor. Well, I guess you can make the determination that when you restrain a person against his will and you expose him to a risk of injury, it should be more serious. It should be a C felony. And that's why I think it's probably worthwhile to keep at least one.
Where did this language on unlawful imprisonment come from?
Okay. I don't know if MPC recommended, but most codes have some form of unlawful imprisonment. This came, I believe, directly from New York. The Oregon commentary is interesting because currently in Oregon, the commission, the group that recommended the criminal code, recommended unlawful imprisonment as a crime. The legislature determined that if it couldn't meet the level of kidnapping, it wasn't a kidnapping, it should be just simply left to civil remedies, and they deleted unlawful imprisonment. So in Oregon, at least, there's no crime of unlawful imprisonment. Most states have some form of, you know, unlawful imprisonment.
Mr. Chairman?
Mrs. Bell.
I'm sorry, Barry. Why are you suggesting to eliminate the second degree?
Yeah, well, I guess I'm sensitive to Brian Shortell's point that here we may be getting into an area where we should be really dealing with civilly. If it's not a kidnapping and it's simply you closing the door and not letting someone out of the room and he's not exposed to a risk of serious physical injury, it's questionable whether the criminal law really should get involved there, especially since it's not involved today.
What's the argument? It's not criminal today.
Yeah, it's not criminal today. But then, of course, you know, you're interfering with the guy with the person's liberty, and why should we do it?
Putting a child, for instance, of course, children are entitled to protection under this, but You put somebody in their room for days and days on end and never feed them. Are you then exposing them to risk of serious physical injury?
Well, that's why I'm recommending you keep the first degree session.
Does starvation include serious physical injury?
Oh, yeah.
Does serious physical injury include starvation?
Well, serious physical injury, I believe, is defined in a way that includes starvation, and because it's any... It's physical injury which causes a substantial risk of death, which, you know, and starvation, I think, causing a substantial risk of death.
Where's the definition of restraint?
Restraint is on page 51, line 21. See, restraint can be done by deception. So if I go to a person, I say, go into this room, I'll meet you in there. And he goes in, and I don't meet him in there. And I close the door, and he said, let me out. And I don't let him out. I don't let him out for a substantial time. I've restrained him. And that could be unlawful imprisonment in the second degree, which would remain a misdemeanor.
There are sure
effects.
Restraint
would the justification section allow storekeeper to restrain somebody?
Yeah, we're going to be coming up to that in theft. And I think it should be moved probably justification, but we've got that under the theft statutes.
What if it's an unreasonable, what if he restrained the guy from leaving the store because he thought he shoplifted and he didn't shop?
I think you should maybe wait. I'm not prepared to discuss that. It's in the theft. I really haven't gone over it.
Do you have to move on off from the prisoner?
Yeah, you know, and that's why I think when we get to it, we should move it somewhere, you know, because it doesn't belong, I don't think it's theft.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the thing that bothers me is with that rather wide definition of restraint, which staff is going to wisely research the New York law, if we just ignoring the affirmative defenses, all of that, it just says that you're guilty of this second of unlawful imprisonment in the second degree if you restrain another person, period. Under that wide definition makes guilty of misdemeanor. And then that bothers me. That's an awfully wide definition of crime. I suppose the subcommission probably sat around and spun all kinds of hypothetical situations ranging over this. That's an awfully broad definition of crime.
Well, what Barry's suggesting is to...
Yeah. I'm saying delete the second degree, but I can't keep the first degree and make first degree just unlawful imprisonment.
Is there any comment? Is there a motion?
So moved.
Move to delete?
Mm-hmm. Motion to delete the second degree?
Yeah.
Unlawful imprisonment second degree.
First degree in the...
Okay. There's no objection to the motion for the...
Okay, and I just assume that includes just changing the title unlawful imprisonment in the first degree to unlawful imprisonment. Okay, just in terms of when we redraft this, Jim, I think unlawful imprisonment should go after kidnapping, with custodial interference being the last.
Let the record reflect that Mr. Miles has snuck off to find out how the fight's going.
The way I'd like to have kidnapping, then unlawful imprisonment, then custodial interference, but in terms of seriousness, I think that's the order. Coercion on page 51. Oh, I'm sorry.
You're not quite to where I am.
Coercion on page 51.
Looks like the record show also that Bob Steve called Larry Carpenter out of $5 because I guess read the article that said that only a fool would bet on Sphinx.
Well,
and I just bet on Sphinx.
Ignorance of law is no defense.
However, with regard to wagering, McGinley versus Clary in 1902, decided by Judge Wickersham in about a 7-page opinion after describing what the witnesses from under the bar table at the old Fairbanks bar and hotel said, he finally concluded that, of course, the law leaves wagers wherever they find them. So if you pay, you can't get it back, and if you don't, you can't use legal methods.
Is there something about the false representation? When I asked him, I wondered what the odds were, Bob went,
the yellow legal definition of
you're the one that read the article, not me.
Okay.
We're being coerced. We're being coerced here.
Okay. The key to coercion is the definition of threat, and that appears on page 136. And there was a mistake in that definition that was caused by us, staff. Subsection, on page 136, subsection B-I-I on line 24, that was knocked out by the subcommission, since that was covered under official misconduct. What we should have in its place is engage in other conduct constituting a crime. So on line 24, the language that is there should be knocked out. And the line, engage in other conduct constituting a crime, should be put in its place. There has been one...
What page is it?
Okay, on 136.
What line?
Oh, I'm sorry.
136,
line 28.
Line
26.
You knock out all
of
BII?
24 through 27.
BII, 24 through
7.
Yes,
and then... Engage
in other conduct constituting a crime.
And then what about
B? Oh, that all meant the same.
That's eight.
Yeah, it was simply my error in preparing minutes. I put the wrong subsection. Got one here.
Oh, great. I'm glad you did that. Otherwise, you'd made it would have been criminal. An awful lot of actions taken in this legislature by that little definition you took. Thank you very much.
Well, actions are still being
done. It's also covered by the official
move the amendment.
It's engaged in other conduct that would constitute a crime.
Yeah, constitute a crime.
Is that substituted for what there is in
BII?
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
That would
constitute.
Constitutes or constitute?
Constitute. Engaged in other conduct constituting a crime. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing no objection. Amendment's done.
Okay. Also, on page 137, there was a change from the
that's related to coercion?
Yeah, well, because coercion is defined by threat. And it's a small statute, but a great long definition. On page 137, there has been some, subsection C there is new, and it was added by the subcommission pretty late in the game. And it deals with threats under subsections I, V, and V. And what this has done is to, what we try to do here is to encourage people to try to settle their problems without being charged with coercion. Also,
so does this require any change, or are you just explaining?
No, I'm just explaining what in fact was done by the subcommission, because it's a difference from the tentative draft. See, arguably, if you didn't have that provision, if a person was living in an apartment and there were termites all around, and the person threatened to tell the newspaper or whatever that there were termites, unless they got rid of the termites, she would be guilty of coercion. The defense in subsection C is designed to exclude that from the crime of coercion, because legitimate bargaining, you know, would be arguably coercion unless the provisions were there.
Anybody have any question about subsection C there?
This is, by the way, just inside. This is a provision that...
What? Good Lord, it's hard to read the sentence. The definition of coercion.
Okay, well, let's
do something about that.
Jim Cotton gave me
that. You can do something about it if you put it in a separate
section. The definition of coercion is 51. Get halfway through the sentence and you feel like you're hearing an echo from the rest of the
sentence. You need an A and a B in there.
51?
Yeah.
Okay, we're back. Okay, we're back.
To engage in conduct A, from which the person has the legal right to
engage. Oh, yeah, that's true. That's what it
means. And B, from which the person has the legal right to engage.
Where are you, Lisa?
Page 51.
Page 51.
Well, read your suggestion.
Well, it sounds to me as though it needs to be divided into A and B. The person commits a crime of coercion if he compels or convinces another person to A, engage in conduct from which the other person has the legal right to abstain, or B, to abstain from engaging in conduct from which the other person has the legal right to engage.
But then,
right?
But
or
then,
something like
but
that.
But still it modifies both of them. So
yeah, well, you have to put that up before the
right.
Can we have a redraft? And that is really just impossible.
Which you're talking about.
The whole damn definition.
Of coercion, just coercion.
Uncoercion.
Not the definition of threat, just how we define the
coercion. If by instilling in him a sense of
you have to use a good method to do that.
I think I'm aware.
Redraft coercion to mean the same thing, to be clear?
Yes. Okay. Even if you have to chop it in a couple of sentences.
Sure.
But also you have to consider the lawyer.
Is he just defined in the code?
No, it is not.
What word did you ask that?
Induce. What does it mean if he induces another person to engage?
I think compelling is more, I don't know, stronger. It has a stronger verb, inducing.
Inducing has an element of persuasion,
whereas
compelling
doesn't.
Yeah, let me.
When you come about why we have word induces there, what it covers that it should.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think it covers an element of persuasion.
It may cover too much.
Yeah, I'll go try to see what other people have done in that too.
To lead on to some action, plain meaning.
But you see, the thing is, though, it's modified. I'm actually concerned about that. This page on line 5 there, you have to instill a fear that it was a threat. So even though that verb is fairly swishy verb,
well,
the intent.
That doesn't make sense more
or less.
Yeah, it's a terror, essentially.
You have a demand there that doesn't really dovetail with induce.
You get a little sentence, you know, whether they go backwards or forwards.
Okay,
well,
it's obvious to see something. Ah,
play this
rather
Ali,
the same creature.
Yeah.
That's very difficult.
Hello?
Well, I wanted to, and you said that you've done this in a time,
but
you can
do that. Yeah, more
of a okay, well, we'll present that.
He's really getting
called
in Las Vegas.
Eight
miles,
Ali's coming out.
Dan Hickey had last year, back when. Dan suggested that the penalty for coercion was
actually making eighth round, even up. He shouldn't be doing that, but he is.
Well,
that might be the old
Ollie boy, though.
Yeah.
The old man. This record would be great. History of the major.
You're going to have no trouble dating this committee meeting by the tape, anyway.
I don't know when you want to discuss classes. Is it feeling that you're not getting classification now? Because Dan asked your book. Okay. Okay, that's it for
so
here.
We'll
come back to it
for
the librarian draft report.
Yeah. Okay, is there anything else anybody had on any of the kidnapping sections here, Gordon?
I had a note, Mr. Chairman, when you were getting there and I was running off away. I don't know if I agreed with them or not, but I just made marginal notes in the four version of the bill here that Mrs. Peter testified. But public safety did not like what on page 49, maybe there are ways that the public safety testified to doing that.
Oh yeah, they did the whole idea. I'm sorry, the whole idea of defense, the affirmative defense to kidnapping, and I thought,
oh, that explains my note to myself then. Oh, and I replied to them that if we were to delete subsection B, then the guy has not much incentive at all to release the person or to return them from the kidnapping, and might as well just let him die or something.
How do you define a relative?
Yeah, that's defined on page 51, line 18.
Where is relative?
It's on 51, line 18.
No, where is it used?
It's in kidnapping, in the affirmative.
Yeah, that's the intent there, of course, is to exclude custodial interference from the kidnapping statute. And, of course, it only applies to the second-degree offense. And if you know, for some reason, you abduct your child with the intent to hold him for ransom, it's going to be kidnapped in the first degree, and that defense won't apply.
Well, I'm thinking of spouses.
Why did you use the agglutinative method in the definition of relative? Read Justice Cardozo's essay on legal justice. The agglutinative method rather than just referring to a degree of consanguinity.
Okay. Well, I still don't understand.
I just tell it.
The whole point is, one of the give me one listed as opposed to just saying, because I think the concept of constant
the illuminative method, for example, is all human beings are A, alive, B, dead, C, other. That's the illuminative method.
Everybody here knows except Doug, and you've done like
the reason is because the concept of consanguinity is unlikely to have much meaning for people that read the code, I mean, let alone attorneys.
Just have Bob Bradley, we learned all about it. No, I'm not going to do it. Start together. That's what I mean.
Okay. All right. Yes.
Okay, where are we at?
Sexual offenses.
Okay. Oh, and Dankwart isn't here. It's his favorite section.
Well, I told him to be here tonight.
Yeah. Lisa? We're going to come to the issue of spousal immunity. So I would suggest that we hold that off because we don't have our committee members here.
Is that right?
Not because you win.
Well, all I want to know is just who I have to vote. I really don't know how you all are feeling about it.
I just told Larry earlier today when you weren't here that I was going to, you know, any fairly controversial, substantial policy decision on all the committee members.
That's fine.
So that, I would say that. I don't know if that's substantial or not, but...
Mr. Chairman,
you want the votes?
It'll be mine. It'll be mine.
I told Dankwart it didn't make any difference to me because I wasn't here.
Just for the committee's record, I just got the revised federal criminal code, and they do not have a spousal immunity section for rape.
Do they have a specific statement that spouses are not immune?
Well, what they do... No, they don't, but in a way they do, and here's why. They say that when it's sexual penetration, rape, there is no spousal immunity. However, when it's sexual contact, you know, it's just the fondling or something like that, there is spousal immunity. I have to go back and
talk to you. That's so strange.
It'll take another century and a half to get rid of all the assumptions about right.
One thing is, do you intend just to move to delete it, or do you want
I would like language suggested by John Katz that specifically states that it does not exist because of the problem of the assumption that
it comes in. May I just ask one thing so we all are discussing the same thing, because I think I'm somewhat confused. When we're talking about spousal immunity, all we're talking about is one issue, and that is the area of sexual assault.
That is
and,
very intentional. Okay.
It has nothing to do with the testimonial privilege.
Right. No other crime, nothing.
Larry?
I would just assume to consider it just prior to this afternoon because the understanding that I had with Ed was that it was going to be up tonight. I think he was, I know he was aware. The only question I raised was that we could give them awareness of when
I want to have everybody vote in.
I'm willing to wait.
Okay.
We'll have the language back. Mr. Chairman, if we're going to draft something, is your intention to focus strictly on sexual assault or on all assaultive conduct between spouses or on any aspect where one spouse is party to the crime against another?
No, my intention was to deal only with sexual assault because I think that that is the only area where spousal immunity now exists.
That's why I asked that question.
Did you apply to
render
assault there?
No, it does not. And, you know, and that's what the point you made in the commentary. It said, you know, the person may not be guilty of the sexual assault, but he's guilty of assault. Yeah. So
under current law, isn't it true that a spouse charged with assault by another spouse cannot invoke the spousal testimonial privilege against the complaining spouse or the complaining witness?
Well,
I can't answer that. Maybe Doug can.
I cannot invoke the privilege. It seems to me to fix my mind that it is like that.
I'm pretty sure it is. Otherwise, I sure wouldn't want a case I lost.
Cannot invoke.
Cannot invoke. In other words, rape is the only place you can invoke it.
I think so.
Okay. All right, I think we got it.
I think, at least somebody check it, but I'm pretty well sure that the current law is, and I think the law would be under this, but I'd like to make sure the current law is also, that wife beats up husband or husband beats up wife, and there's an assault charge, that the defendant cannot claim the privilege of having the spouse not testify.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Yeah, I don't think
okay, sexual assault, first degree, page 52, line 24, 25. There's been a change since you looked at it last year, and the change has been that the commission added the words, in attempting to do so, cause a serious physical injury to that person. Now, the important thing here to note is, number one, this is not just an attempt. It doesn't cover all attempts. It simply covers an attempt where you cause serious physical injury. And it's, since causing is a result, the culpability there would be reckless. So if you are attempting to engage in sexual penetration and you cause serious physical injury to the person, no matter whether you intended it or not, as long as it was reckless, you're guilty of the...
If you cause injury and you attempt, then you commit a felony at the level of manslaughter.
That's right. You cause serious physical injury.
I want to read this definition of serious physical injury just 28 times. Okay. That is okay. Well, that's certainly all right. Yeah, that's pretty heavy. I don't see any problem.
Any question on that, Larry?
Yeah, this was talking to Gene, and you may have done something about this, but my question was, line 24, in attempting to do so cause a serious physical injury to that person, even though the to do so is there, shouldn't it be or in attempting to do so without consent cause a serious physical injury to that person?
That's the part of Jim's there, I'm telling you.
Well, because it could be with consent attempting to do so if we're talking about sexual penetration.
You're talking about making love to a consenting party and being clumsy about it and putting in...
Well, we're not talking... I mean, yeah, we're clearly not talking about that. And Jim, is there some question as to...
Well,
I think there's...
the word's good to find that.
Yeah. Okay. You say, knowingly engages in sexual penetration, and that does not require intentional engagement. You know you're doing it, but you may or may not intend to do it. But then it says, in attempting to do so, in attempting to knowingly engage in sexual penetration, to me there's kind of a problem there, because it seems to me you can only attempt to engage in intentional sexual penetration. You can't attempt to engage in knowing. I mean, is that...
I'm not too sure.
Really weird.
There's a whole section, a whole chapter in Perkins on that very problem there.
I think it's fraught with lot of confusion.
May or may not be
appropriate to judicial resolution rather than statutory definition.
What if you broke it apart, because what we did was attempt to combine two things under subsection 1. Just break that second part, the second section apart.
Make it a new subsection.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea.
If anything, it'll just make it easier to read.
I think it's right. Yeah.
Jim, could we say and say if we had a new subsection?
Take care of Larry's problem, too.
Yeah, I think that's a very good idea.
Okay. If we had a new subsection, too, we simply could say, in an attempt to do the acts prescribed in subsection 1, you cause serious physical injury.
I would tend to say it explicitly.
Attempting to
intentionally engage in sexual penetration causes serious physical injury.
I might make a point here while you guys are thinking about drafting, and that is that one of the things people complain about is that it's hard to read. One of the things that makes anything hard for anybody is when it refers back to other statutory sections. And sometimes it's necessary because you don't want to rewrite the whole thing, but whenever possible, we should try to get away from references to other statutory sections, you know, if we can, without making it too long. Because that's one of the things that when you've got four or five of them within the same definition, it gets real confusing.
Okay.
think that if this bill passes, it's going to be new enough to people that we probably ought to take an unusual action, and that is some kind of a directive, however we should do it. A directive to the reviser of statutes that in any section that uses these words that are new words of art that are particularly defined elsewhere in the title, that there be in the annotations below the section a thing saying serious physical injury is defined in so-and-so in that small six-point type in the annotation following each section.
Yeah, I think the hope would be, and I just look, being a little optimistic, but if it passes, to, number one, separate it from the title, from the statutes, so people can just have a separate criminal code. Include in that this, the statute plus commentary plus the references of when something.
But in any case, the reviser of statutes is charged with making such references when he normally deals with the Mickey Company and getting the title printed up and all that. And it seems to me that I thought it was Mickey for a year. I understand Mickey.
Okay.
I think that's a very important point because otherwise you have an awful lot of confused people raising the kind of questions we heard in the committee hearing. Even as we attempt to simplify and simplify, we're still going to have a problem.
I think Randy Barry would be delighted to do that if the committee makes some sort of
I think we ought to put it in the committee report, and that the reviser statute is directed and needs to do this.
Okay, is there any objection then to the division of subsection 1 and 2 subsections?
No, but I do object. Okay. Just because I don't quite understand yet the need for it. Could somebody explain it one more time?
Okay. Well, there's two mental states involved, intentionally and knowingly. In my opinion, it's practically impossible to commit an attempt without doing it intentionally. However, the mental state prescribed in line 23 is knowingly. So when you have attempting to in line 24, you're left in doubt as to whether the defendant has to intentionally want to engage in sexual penetration or whether he just simply knows that that's what he's doing.
Are we adding
a
letter?
I think it should be separated, but I've got to think this one out. I know what you're saying. I'm not too sure you want to do that.
You're right. I'm not too sure that either.
Yeah,
we'll have to fool around with
it. Yeah,
problem stems from common law when you have things called general intent crimes and specific intent crimes. Specifically intended to do something, in general, intended to do the act you were doing and resulted in something else. Like you murdered a specific intent crime or some other thing, you pick up something and read with it, then that's a specific intent.
It's
confusing because I think it's just a legal problem here is that what he's saying is that in the future you may not be able to get a conviction for attempted sexual assault unless you make it an intentional. Rather than knowing, and I concur that you may run into that problem.
What's the difference between knowing and
intention? Knowing for conduct is your conscious objective is to engage in the conduct or cause the result. Conscious objective is to engage in conduct or cause a result. Knowing is awareness that your conduct is of that nature or that circumstances exist.
You said knowing for both reasons.
Yeah, you did.
The first one was intention.
The first one was intentional. Yeah.
Okay. Now, what you're saying then is that it has to be an intentional attempt rather than a knowing.
I can't answer that. I think Jim and I've got to sit down and think about it. Frankly, I wouldn't want to. I'd like to sit down with it and break it apart first, and then see what the culpability should be. Just come back with me on a redraft. I see that there's a problem, and I'm just not quick now to answer.
Mr. Chairman, I'm willing to look at a redraft, but I'd rather not vote on it.
The voter, the feeling was that we should have two sections, right?
That's
okay. Subsection 2, line 26, a couple of comments. Number one, Chief Barkley is somewhat concerned that since we said being any age, we could be sanctioning 15, be guilty of a felony because he engaged in sexual penetration with a 13-year-old when they're playing nursemaid, according to Jake Barton. Well, I'm just conveying his concern.
What his concern was that the level of the crime would be too high in certain circumstances?
Yeah, I think Barkley all throughout is concerned about that, but I don't have that concern. I think.
I need to look at the differentiation.
We have to call recess for 8 minutes.
The thrilling climax.
The thrilling climax.
Where's
Radio? You can do whatever you want in this 8 minutes. Is that okay?
Right.
I'm
going
to
go home.
What happened? Oh, you're going to bring it
in? And what's it?
You know what?
Look at that.
Turn on the radio.
It's over here.
They're turning off the tape.
After being conned by
my
father.
No.
They cranked him up and then he
was
he and Anthony Bell and Sarah Brown. That was Mars and
now some of those guys. I'm going to have some bitch to my leg. Call the meeting back door. Mr. Parker.
I want the record to show that the full one is $5.
Fair enough, say it because the code goes into effect. You just committed a violation, at least.
I only note this in an archive of 10.
There's a thing.
You're not that old.
Well, it's not in my presence, too.
Okay.
I'm page 52, line 26. I just wrote a point about Chief Barkley saying that. You know, we may be, by saying being any age for the defendant, we may be in conduct here we don't want to.
Or just
maybe
making...
Well, 12-year-olds, for
instance. No, a 14-year-old.
What's
it? This is what I believe does say a person over 16, but a person over 18. But I thought, we had discussed this once with the commission, that the person that is, if he's under 18, he or she, the defendant, he hasn't committed a crime anyway.
He hasn't committed a crime anyway.
Right.
Unless they're found unfit to retry to do it.
So,
then maybe
in
the next meeting,
I don't particularly think it's necessary to make a change there.
Okay.
The other.
Any question on that?
Okay. The this comes up also on this subsection, and the question is, do we want to include incapacitated persons within the first degree section? Currently, if you turn to your third degree provision, page. 53, I'm sorry, page 54, sexual assault in the third degree, if I misspoke. Line 2, being any age engaged in sexual penetration with another person who is incapable of consent by reason of incapacitation. Incapacitation includes both physical and mental conditions, and that's defined on page 54, line 19. Issue, should they be treated identically? Should engaging in sex with someone who's under... essentially under 13 be treated, I'm sorry, rephrase the question, should engaging in sex with an incapacitated person be treated similarly to engaging in sex with a person that's under 13, as opposed to its treatment now, which it says it's treated less seriously. It's comparable to engaging in sex with a person that's under 16 but over 13.
Where is incapacitated?
Yeah, that's defined on page 54, line 19.
Did we not, at some point, talk about changing the word incapacitated to incompetent, and would that apply here to you?
No, what we did is we used, originally we had in the section on justification, we used the term incompetent. Then what we did is we got the definition of incapacitated from another title, Title IX, and we defined incompetent as a portion of what now would be called incapacitated under Title IX. Here we have another definition of incapacitated that just applies to this chapter.
And excuse me, please.
Sorry.
Oh, here it is.
I think we should leave it as third degree.
Why?
I know you aren't going to like this. The sweet young thing who says I was just drunk and he raped me would then be charging the person with the highest degree of sexual assault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I was thinking of incapacitation, you know, a real
thing here. Correct. Well, it includes it. It includes everything else, too.
I think, you know, to see felony penalty now on it, number one, there isn't a penalty on it in existing law. I think that the see felony penalty is sufficient.
Well,
This is different than assault, I think. This is
totally different. Okay.
The next question is on sexual assault in the second degree. And the way the code is set up, the second degrees and fourth degrees only refer to sexual contact, whereas first and third refer to penetration. Definition of sexual contact is on page 54, line 22. I think you have to decide whether that definition is too broad. It was suggested in Anchorage that it was, and the reason being that the definition of sexual contact, line 25 to 26, includes the intentional touching by the defendant of the victim's genitals or anus through clothing. Example given to me was guy and a girl sitting on a couch. I'll give it verbatim. He told me the guy puts his hand on the woman's crotch, and the woman pushes him away. Then he pushes his hand back. I read that as without consent under our definition of without consent on page 55, since she is coerced by the use of physical force. So that conduct, you know, which arguably is somewhat innocent, it's arguably a big felony. Now,
couldn't you give a much more extreme example? That is, aren't we defining as a big felony that the bar patron who passed the barmaid on the button?
No.
Brings his
I don't want to be so specific, but the thing is that we specifically limited anus. We didn't include buttocks. I mean, that was very intentional there. He's going to have a pretty well think about it. Yeah.
This came up at the last meeting, remember that?
Well, we raised it this committee last year, too.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah, it doesn't cover ass-slapping. I mean, be completely blunt. I mean, a simple assault is ass-slapping. Now, if you define sexual contact as A, subsection A, you have intentional touching by the defendant, the victim's genitals, anus, or female breast. Okay, direct touching. And then C.
You got it just the right time.
You know, and I'm just asking you whether you think B should be included there. The problem, of course, is we've got a good sexual assault statute.
You're going too fast, sorry. What should be included? Where?
Yeah,
well, you're going back and forth the definition to the definition of the offense. Where are you?
I'm looking at the definition of sexual contact.
Oh, okay.
Because that is key to all of first degree. And it's been suggested that the definition is too broad because of the hypothetical I just gave you. And the suggestion to limit it would be to at least knock out B, possibly knock out B also. But I don't have too much problem with B. B may be more troublesome.
D, I don't have any problem. Well, I'm sorry. The example I gave can still apply through B, depending upon the coincidence of an individual's movement.
Oh,
to be quite frank about it.
There's a reason why it may not, and that is it has to be sexual contact without consent, and that's why I said he first touches the crotch, he's pushed away, and then he does it again.
I'm thinking of the barmaid example.
Okay, but say he's allowed, as I see it under the code, he's allowed one free shot. Essentially, because
is this like the dog gets one?
Well,
under the dog gets the right to the first bite.
You see, the definition the definition of without consent, it requires, with or without resisting, is coerced by the use of physical force. I read that as to require you do something and the person's aware of it and she's forced to have, he or she is forced to have that other person do it. It doesn't cover the unexpected slap. I don't see that as coerced. My interpretation perhaps is not correct, but that's how I read it.
Mr. Chairman, I think that we should not have it as a B felony, the kind of, maybe we should have as a crime, but not as a B felony, the kind of conduct that happens in some of the tougher joints around the state every day between a bar patron and the girl who's serving the drinks. Because you're charging them with the equivalent of what would now be called second degree rape for maybe drunkenly patting her on the ass and missing in a different way than you normally think missing might mean. And that's certainly, you shouldn't be doing that. It certainly should be criminal. Well, it should be a B felony, as though it's the same level of what we're calling a second degree rape here.
Not just to be disagreeable, but I tend to like it the way it is. I don't think anything's going to come of that bar incident, but something might well come of an incident in a different setting. And
I agree with that part.
Well, you recall the word intentional, is it? It's the intent to touch what you did touch, I think.
That is correct. The conscious objective is the touch.
Oh, there you go. Wait a minute. Say what you just said again. Okay. I see what you're
saying. You use the word intentional.
You're talking
about somebody being corrected, right? And just flailing around.
Wow.
See it all the time.
Larry?
I've just never very much liked even the playful, drunken interplay of that type.
I don't think it's very good either. I'm just saying, a policy decision, do we make a B felony, do we make an A misdemeanor, or what do we make?
I understand that. I think a B felony is just fine.
Okay. Is there any motion?
I don't think so. Okay. Because the problem is, Mr. Chairman, although I think I'm right with regard to that, I do not want to eliminate other conduct that's described by the same definition. I don't feel very inventive at 8:36 in the evening on coming up with new language, so I'm going to not make a motion. But, well, please don't pin me in a corner and say, well, we already did, dear man, that we bring up the sexual offenses.
Okay.
Mr.
Where's the
Is it the fun of the
drink? Yeah, without
consent is the fun of the drink. No, not with. Do we use with
consent? Definition of consent. What constitutes consent?
Well, wait, do we use it in the statute?
Yeah, you do.
Where's that?
Well, a person commits a crime of sexual assault first degree, being in the 18, only engaging sexual penetration with another person without consent of that.
Right.
Without consent.
Yeah, that's the only term we use, without consent, and that's the fine of page 55.
Well, that's what maybe it is.
Page 55, then.
With or without resistance, that is probably fully coerced. It's coerced by the use of physical force. Won't you give me just about 2 seconds of what you mean by that, Barry? What just tell you mean is coerced by the use of physical force? How much force?
Any physical force. Physical force is defined as physical pain. If I grab a person and say, you're going to have sex with me, that's coercion right there. That's physical force right there.
So that also would involve, in most situations, the express or implied threat, as there is in the rest of the definition.
I think that definition, by the way, is probably...
Well, that's, of course, the person threatening was 2'3", and the other party was 7 feet tall. Another girl
that testified, hey, I'm not... Anchored the other day. I gave no resistance to that one because I didn't want to meet and ask her what we got into. But what I was worried about is like people are after my neck or something. Maybe the girl doesn't tell me it's okay or yes or something. And if this girl offered no resistance at all, she did. She was beaten up one time and she was dead.
Well, under the statute, it must be established that there was physical force or the express or implied threat. You can't have prosecution, you can't have conviction unless there was the use of physical force against person or property
or the expression implied threat of imminent death, imminent physical injury, or imminent kidnapping.
Okay. You're going to prove that by a reasonable doubt. That's part of it.
I just want to make sure.
I think it's the best definition. Great. Okay. Okay. On sexual assault,
Mr. Chairman, since Mr. Dankler is here, are we going to deal with the other issue? Or?
No. No. We didn't have a full committee.
Elias doesn't care about sex. He only cares about fish. That's why he's never here.
Don't worry. I'll take care of it.
Sexual assault.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go back to sexual assault in the first degree. On page 53, you have all the degrees of relativeness, and it seems to me to be the same as you define relative elsewhere. Is it possible to eliminate all of that line 2 through line 8 and just make a reference to a relative as it was defined in the kidnapping section?
I think we defined it a little differently there. Maybe not.
Step-parent.
Relative is defined.
Ancestor, descendant.
Yeah, go back to kidnapping.
Maybe you're right.
I think we should.
Sibling, uncle, or aunt. Including relatives of the same degree through marriage or adoption.
Well, death we got
death. These are the only additional things. Page 51.
Well, where's the definition of kidnapping?
It's on page 51.
Oh, okay.
Parents are included in the relatives and siblings.
See, the way the statute is, you couldn't, if you use the definition of relative, you couldn't have a niece engaging with a... I understand that it would be nice to combine it. I don't know whether we can by the two definitions.
It doesn't have a lot of parents.
See, the thing is, we make it clear here that we include half blood relatives, and that isn't, specified in the kidnapping. It doesn't. It says the lawful custodian refers to when you don't. I'm sorry, the relative refers to when you have a defense to kidnapping. And it says you're a relative and you take it from the person because you're a relative to that person. I just got to think about it.
Okay.
They're awfully close to the same.
Maybe just as a drafting matter, you at least don't want to list A, B, C,
yeah,
D.
Suppose
you want to put
Mr. Chairman.
Relative.
And define relative. That's right. We could say four lines just simply by doing that.
Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me.
Okay, Mr. Brown.
Well, the problem it raises is the thing I mentioned in the Anchorage hearing on Saturday, and that is you can have, if we've got relative for one purpose in one criminal statute and then it's defined slightly differently in another criminal statute, if you've got somebody who's serving on a jury panel, they go from trying a kidnapping case in courtroom A to trying a sexual assault case in courtroom C, and the jury instructions are different with a different definition of the same word. Now, that's the kind of thing we're trying to eliminate.
Yeah, we could deal with that, I think, because previously we defined relative in kidnapping because it was used two places.
Yeah.
Now it's only used one because we eliminated unlawful imprisonment in the second degree. We probably should move the definition of relative into the actual statute and define relative this way and use it in sexual assault.
I think everywhere we have any kind of a particular phrase of art or word that's defined in this code, it should have one definition and not a different definition for different crimes because of the example I'm giving.
Okay, well, in redrafting it, then maybe staff could look and see if possible use one definition.
Define relative consistently throughout the sexual assault.
If possible.
Throughout.
And if there are reasons why you cannot do that, draft it such that the situation that Fred described doesn't exist where we have two definitions of the
same word.
Find a different term.
Yeah. Then if that's the case, then...
It's not a problem yet.
Okay. So the only point is we're trying to make it as little as confusing as possible. Either through one definition or...
Choose a different word, yeah.
Different language so that it's not confusing.
Yeah, the whole point is that there's no need to define relative and back to kidnapping.
That I don't agree with.
Well, we only use it once, Fred.
Yeah, but it's an important place.
Oh.
If you're going to, relative can be pretty relative.
Okay. All right. What next?
sexual assault in third, fourth degree. This came up last year. Chief Barkley talked about it. And the question is, in subsection 1, say in the third degree section, being 18 years of age or older, he engages in penetration with a person under 16 years of age. I think after under 16 years of age, you have to add but 13 years of age or older. Because if he's going, in other words, as drafted, the third degree covers anyone under 16, whereas we've already decided that the first degree would only cover, would cover people under 13. So this goes really to Jim's point, prosecutorial discretion. Arguably, as it's drafted, if you have sex with a 12-year-old, you could be charged either third degree or first degree. So I think it's just necessary to put that limiting language in.
Where's the definition of penetration?
Page 55, line 4.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. And I would like, by the way, I would like that same change to be made to the fourth degree section, too, where we use the age.
What would be the charge of that if 30 years old and had relations with a
14-year-old? There would be a C felony, as it would be, this would be a third degree provision, yes. And if it was under 13, it would be an A felony.
Okay, it says over 19 and under 16. Mm-hmm. It's
yeah, I'd like to, that's for contact, though. The fourth degree is only for contact, the third degree is for penetration. So that would be similar to the lewd and lascivious. Right.
What's the one?
The amendment it would confine it to between 16 and 13.
Both in fourth
degree.
Going
back so many times, where
third degree and fourth degree. It exists now, you can be charged for both. You can be charged with both third degree and first degree for the same offense.
And the amendment is?
To make it 16 to 13. So that.
Which?
16 to 13.
You both?
Yeah.
Third and fourth.
So that you're either charged, you can either be charged with third or first or fourth or second.
That is really clear.
Now, maybe it's the arms, Jim, but I do not. Could somebody give me page so and so, line something, the amendment?
Yes, 4, line 1.
Yeah. That's changed to what?
Under 16 years old, but of age, but 13
years old. 13 years of age. So some magical way to
put that. But older, 20, but 13 year old.
It's designed to make the crimes mutually exclusive.
Okay.
Is the idea.
I think as a result of this recent case, it's important that we do it.
Okay. Everybody understand the amendment now? Very okay. If there's no objection, then the amendment's adopted.
Objection, Mr. Chairman. That's what I want to
speak
of doing. By passing the amendment, may I assume you do not eliminate the possibility that, for instance, depending upon the proof of facts, someone might, as a lesser included offense, be found guilty of fourth degree sexual assault when charged with third degree. We're not eliminating that possibility by passing this amendment, are we?
I don't see how. I mean, if you can't prove the penetration, you can prove the contact. And the age thing, with the exception of the defendant's age, is identical.
Well, that's a strange policy. No, I don't object to the amendment, but then we do have a honest policy question. I call my objection, Mr. Chairman.
He sounds like a meteor to worry about.
Yeah.
Is this pun night for you?
Okay, is there any objection to the motion? There's no objection. Okay, I'm done.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Vice Chairman, the Chairman will listen.
Yes, Mr.
Brown. Okay, Chairman of Vice. With regard to what we've now got here, is it possible that we're actually making a B felony, conduct which may not, in some of the fact situations, be as bad as some of the conduct that we're making a C felony in the third degree? That bothers me a little bit. Say, we're actually involved with sexual penetration in Section 430. And then, yet that's a Class C felony, and yet we have a Class B felony in Section 420, sexual assault in second degree, situations that do not all involve penetration.
Yeah, but look, the reason is the aggravated factors. Number one, the subsection one there in this first. Well, I'm sorry. Number one, in the second degree provision is without consent. So there's been some threat of physical force or actual use of physical force.
Okay, let me go on down through there then.
Then it's very young.
Under 13, without consent. Well, then the sexual contact with a relative, we're saying, is worse behavior. With the age restriction stated, is worse behavior than sexual penetration as defined in third degree sexual assault. Now that still bothers me. Is the conduct in subsection 3 on page 53, line 16, is that all the conduct that could be described by that? Is that really conduct that most of society would consider worse than some of the conduct described in Section 430?
Let me explain. This would normally be fourth degree, except we grade the age. Most of this conduct would be fourth degree.
And which conduct?
Subsection 3 on page 53, I think that's what you're talking about, Fred. Most of that would qualify as fourth degree, normally. Because being 19 years of age or older, being engaged in sexual contact with a person under 16, here we lift it up to 18 for the victim. The aggravating factor is, though, is that it's the incest, that it's relation. So the combination of youngsters and...
But it's not incest because it's not penetration, depending upon what your view of incest is.
That's right.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mr. Carter, I think the problem that we're entering now impinges on the spousal immunity section on page 52. For example, a person does not commit the crime of sexual assault in any degree if the victim is, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I think that's a problem with something like if sexual assault in the second degree continues to read as it does. For example, I could buy spousal immunity. A person does not commit the crime of sexual assault except in the first degree if the victim is his legal spouse. But if we keep if we dump or keep in its present form the spousal immunity clause, then I think that we have to change to some extent the four degrees of sexual assault. I'd really like to.
I'm not following.
Let's try this hypothetical.
Let's say that we get rid of the spousal immunity provision. Then what are you saying?
Well, then I'm saying that a husband who touches the breast of his wife. Touches the breast of his wife can be unless she is
without her consent.
Yeah, without her consent can be guilty of a Class B felony. I think that's a little harsh.
harsh.
Well, the word, that sounds harsh if you just consider usual definition of without consent. But with the definition of without consent in this bill, which is on page 55, there it is coerced by the use of physical force or by express or implied threat of imminent death and so forth. So I don't think that's a problem with that definition of without consent.
Well, Larry, let's wait and take that up if we do consider this possible. You know, and we can go back and look at any of the provisions as it might be affected by that change. Okay, Fred, what are you doing with your question?
I'm still puzzling over it. It bothers me. I think there is some conduct.
Why don't you sleep on it?
Described, well, I hope somebody's taking note of it too.
Well,
there's some conduct described in three within second degree sexual assault, which society would, while condemning, not consider as bad as some of the conduct described in third degree, which is not as serious a problem.
Could we? I don't know what has happened to that motion.
I haven't made a motion.
Oh, there was not any motion on the 13, adding the 13?
Yeah, oh,
that passed? Fine. Okay, I'm sorry.
Sure, my objection.
Okay.
Well, Fred, we don't think about it. Ian, do you have any comment?
I'm having a comment on Fred.
Okay, let's. Does anybody have any comment on Fred's problem? Well, Fred, I don't know what we can do about your problem, because I can't think of a case that you're talking about. And, you know, you're just bringing up a question. I don't see the answer.
I just have a couple more things, and I'll finish with this.
Does anybody?
Okay, sexual contact means the intentional touching of a female breast. That means that somebody who is who touches the breast of his niece under subsection 3 is guilty of a class B felony.
Wait, without consent, which is coerced.
Where is that?
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's not in
subsection
3.
I'm sorry. That's correct.
And yet, we don't
That's
favor
correct.
That because that does tend in the direction of incest, among other things, that does not seem to be as serious as an act involving sexual penetration that is being proscribed.
Then that goes to really what class of relatives you would want to knock out, perhaps, of the sexual contact one.
I would think that in the very least that the conduct described in 3 should not be a Class B felony, but a Class C felony, at least no more serious than a conduct involving sexual penetration. Otherwise, it's not consistent.
Well, the consistency...
It's like having a 10-year sentence for assault with a deadly weapon and a 20-year sentence for simple assault.
Maybe move it down to 4th.
Yeah, it's really not much
it would be,
to do that.
As a matter of drafting, it'd be easier to move it down to 4th degree, but I think perhaps we think it's more serious.
Or you could eliminate it completely and just get covered by the 4th degree
provision.
Well,
I'm sorry. I think sexual contact with people under 18 is a very, very serious offense.
Is it more serious than the acts described that constitute Class C felony in the current draft, though, in the 3rd degree? That's my problem.
Yeah,
I
understand.
You know, so you see what I mean?
Yeah. I understand what you're saying, but I don't...
Well, Fred, what do you want to do with that?
Well, I think that
the thing is that the way you set up is very simple.
All the third degree is people between 13 and 16. That's very limited.
I don't see why we need the third degree. Why don't we make all of that second degree assault and eliminate the third degree? Because that's...
I think that if you're thinking about restructuring it, I can come up with an alternative on doing it, because I think I know what you're getting at. But I don't know if it's best to just do it now at 9 o'clock. I'm really...
Well, I'm not going to make a motion for that reason.
I could work on thinking of how you might approach it.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to have a suggestion on how we might be able to rearrange it so the conduct described in subsection 3, while still a felony, does not seem to be out of place compared to the relative seriousness of these other offenses in second and third degree. It certainly seems out of place.
Yeah, the problem is that
you're touching a niece's breast is supposed to be get a B felony, and yet an act involving sexual penetration is only a C felony.
Okay, Fred, let's leave your problem up in the air for now. Okay, you work on it. Sure, do you have some additional questions?
Yeah, I do. Very quick ones. In indecent exposure, line 15, I think provocative is probably should be knocked out for the same reason you had problems with the simple assault. If I expose my genitals to my girlfriend, it's provocative, and I might be acting recklessly. That I committed indecent exposure. I think we just left offensive or insulting, it would be covered.
Mr. Speaker?
Is there a motion on that? Mr.
I will make that motion.
Is there any discussion? Is there any objection?
And then the next question is, why are we leaving out bread?
That's my next point. At the original draft that went over last year, we had female breast in as what could be subject to indecent exposure. The commission voted it out and the suggestion of our committee.
Well, as long as it's okay to be provocative now, I think.
I have no...
We only have to be offensive.
Pardon me, to clear up the point, are you saying that it should be, the breath should be in there as far as
I agree with that.
I normally would not agree with it, but here we have the additional burden of showing reckless disregard for the offensive or insulting effect. So if it were in a fact situation where one would not expect it to have an offensive or insulting effect, or you wouldn't be able to prove reckless disregard. I don't see any problem including female breast in there. It should be. That's enough of the burden of proof for the prosecution.
Do you have a motion?
I still move it. Someone else could. Okay. I withdraw. I'm making too many motions. But the record.
Please then. Make the motion for the breast.
And if he exposes.
Makes the female breast.
No, just sheet female breast.
Okay.
No.
Is there any objection to the motion?
He exposes his genitals, buttocks. Female breasts or anus.
It is female breast.
I'm sorry. His genital buttocks or anus. We'll come back with it. It was originally drafted. It's very late. He's talking about buttocks. One other point I should note. One.
By the way, buttocks should be buttocks, and assault is misspelled in one of these things.
I want the staff to work on the problem of female breasts.
Page 52, line 21.
On page 55, line 5, after an intense discussion with Jim on this, we probably want to take out the word other.
What line?
Line 5. Since
or any intrusion.
Yeah, because fellatio is probably not.
Well, along with that same line, Barry, on line 7. Why do you need but admission of semen is not required?
What
text does that mean?
It's a traditional.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes it's been required that you, under some rape statutes, it's been required that you shoot me.
What statute do you ever see that?
Come on.
Well, this applies to the most definition of sexual penetration. I mean, it's not like we just. I think it might be an existing. I'm going to just check the existing one. 115, 120.
Well, basically.
It goes back to no problem where that was
the argument of this. Is that the violation of the woman's body has taken place, whether or not the semen has been emitted.
It's not just
I don't see any point to put it in there, because the minute you make penetration, that's the one incidental as to whether that's in there or not.
Well, it's in the definition of sexual penetration, and the argument has been made previously, you know, we've gone back several decades now, that if there was, you could not show emission of semen, then you couldn't show penetration, and it used to be. I have a vague memory about something in the Uniform Code of Military Justice that relates to this.
It's I think Representative Dankworth is right. In majority of jurisdictions, you don't have to enjoy it to commit the crime.
Right, and this specifically says it.
You know, and this makes it explicit, but I think he's right. If you left that out, it'd probably be the same.
Probably.
What's the current definition?
It doesn't require. It doesn't have that
penetration period. And you don't have to worry about
the existing one does not have. Existing law does not have it.
Okay. Let me ask this question: if existing law doesn't have it, and we continue, then existing law, the definition of existing law does not include this phrase. It's the status of Alaska law such that we don't, you know, that this is not included.
Well,
if it's already established in Alaska, then there's probably not any reason to.
Chairman, I suppose we can delete it as long as the committee report specifically expresses why, because here we're in a sensitive position that somebody, since the tentative drafts haven't been published, that someone could say that we had a different policy viewpoint and somehow thought it should be required to prove the emissions.
I don't object to that. question whether if there's any reason why it should be in there, but it just seems like to me that the first part of that sentence says that any penetration, you've added it, and why even suggest a defense or anything else when you just say but, and it just didn't seem like that was necessary.
Mr. Chairman, I will not oppose a motion to delete it as long as the committee report expresses exactly why.
Yeah, I think we're, if we take it out, we are suggesting that it kind of maybe a technicality that I don't understand, but I think it'll
be
in there.
Yeah.
I may be expressing myself on a policy issue, and take it for what it's worth. By putting in something about semen, you are suggesting that it's limited to males, and it is not limited to males. Females can commit these crimes. So I agree with Representative Dankworth, it should probably be removed.
It didn't have anything to do with the lawyers in here. That wouldn't be,
I've never seen any statute that required admission of semen to commit rape.
Oh, right, no one requires it. They either don't mention it or they specifically, you know, do what we
did.
But
it
was
in the defense.
Well,
it's
just some old foggy legal history, something hanging back.
But probably never in the last.
Well, the problem, Mr. Chairman, is that we've got all kinds of hoary law hangs on our shoulders as a result of the Fairbanks.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Scheibel and my friend, and you get into the thing when you get into the proof of rape, and you get, where you see a lot of things, you know, they'll find that the doctor would examine a woman and find things, and that adds to the proof that you've been raped, you know, in the young child.
That is sexual.
But we were getting in there is whether you admit that as evidence that she's had intercourse and stuff. It has nothing to do with whether there was penetration.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to make the motion to delete it, but I want to oppose the motion if somebody else makes a motion to report the flex why we did it.
Do we have any motion?
Well,
very good.
Well, I think it's a somewhat of a sensitive issue, and I think since it was in the tentative draft, I wouldn't mind a statement. I just don't see how it could hurt. I mean, I agree it's unnecessary, but I don't think it hurts.
It's not that
important.
It
just
seems so
redundant.
Right,
you certainly couldn't have done that. But it does continue the tradition of the Alaskan statutes founded by the fellow who borrowed
it. Well, it changes it, because it doesn't, in the existing statute, it doesn't appear. I mean, there's no...
Well, the general tradition that our offenses against the person are more lurid descriptions than might otherwise be.
I really think that if our existing statute in Alaska doesn't have it, and, you know, whether we put it in the tentative draft or not, if we just continue the existing definition... Mm-hmm.
Well, we changed the existing definition somewhat. I certainly can make it crystal clear in the commentary that we considered this language. We felt that since we say any penetration, however slight, there's no requirement of semen. We specifically apply it to, you know, any type of, it doesn't have to be a male, it can be a female.
We should say we felt that's the status of existing.
Yeah. It's unnecessary.
I don't know if you want to do too much reference in the commentary to the status of existing law, since we are in a sweeping way ripping all the things up.
Well, all right, anyway.
We don't know the sense.
I'll make a motion to delete the language and the...
And include the committee report?
Yes, and have it reflect the committee report so we felt it was not necessary.
I'll object to the motion. I think it probably should remain in there for the reason that Barry mentioned that it is a sensitive area, and for the reason that I don't know what existing law is on it. It's not in the present law. I don't know whether there's enough case law to make it not necessary that there be semen and so on and so forth. I would feel, because it's a fairly recent development that rape has been redefined that way, I would feel much more comfortable with it.
Okay. You two are really getting like Joseph McCarthy.
That's right.
His attorney.
Okay, all those in favor of the motion is to delete the language. All those in favor of the motion, raise your right hand. All those opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Reflected. Okay, and also the other on line 5.
The other on line 5.
Is there any objection to that deletion? No objection to deletion.
I'll try to come back when we go back over some of this stuff with an attempt to combine some of the things that you were pointing out.
All right. Meeting adjourned.
Meeting adjourned. February 15th, 1978, adjourned 9 p.m.